20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, friends. Happy Sunday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. As always, you are wonderful, wonderful people for joining me, talking some Green Bay Packers on this beautiful Sunday. We're going to go over some Packers trades, some players that are actually on the Packers roster that could get traded this offseason. We know one of them already. We'll get through that list of 10 in just a moment. Before we get there, first of all, I actually want to thank Red Fox 36 for becoming a brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube member. If you have not yet checked out those Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube memberships, make sure to do so. Also, any likes, subscriptions, comments, five-star reviews, those things are always insanely helpful. So if you have the opportunity, make sure to do that as well. Tell a friend about the show. But the main thing I wanted to get to was we did have a major transaction that took place, or at least is reportedly taking place. It can't take place yet because the new league here hasn't started, but Deebo Samuel is headed to the Washington Commanders for a fifth round pick. I know that there's always this connotation and, you know, of like, why is Deebo Samuel going for a fifth round pick? I'll just put it that way, right? He's a really good player. Why are the 49ers trading him for a fifth round pick? Why are the Commanders able to get him for a fifth round pick? And all of these sort of things that go into it. I might do an episode coming up of like just trade value and how it's calculated, because there seems to be this thought process of just, it's all over the place of what people think trade value is and what players go for and things like that. I didn't know if Deebo was going to get anything. I think we talked about that the other day when we went over, like, you know, could the Packers get Deebo Samuel? It'd be a fun player in their offense. He doesn't, you know, exactly fit that number one wide receiver role. You know, he's more of a gadget type player, line him up in the backfield, the slot, outside, screens, run after the catch, that sort of thing. But he would have been a fun player in Matt LaFleur's offense. But basically I said, I'm like, I wouldn't trade for him at this point, but if he became a free agent and you got him on a good contract, anything like that, then it becomes much more of an interesting scenario. Well, in this case, the Commanders decided to trade a fifth round pick. And I actually think that's good value for San Fran. Again, I didn't know if they were going to get anything for him. And for the Commanders, it makes sense, right? Like, they're a team that has a ton of salary cap space to spend, and it's maybe not all going to be available and usable via free agency. The fifth round pick is completely irrelevant to them, and he's going to be a really fun piece in that Washington offense. So I think it makes sense from all sides here. I think it makes sense for Deebo. He's going to go to a place where he should be utilized very, very well. San Francisco gets off of the contract and gets rid of a player that wanted to move on anyway, and the Commanders get a player. The salary cap doesn't really matter because they got $1 billion to spend, and the fifth round pick doesn't matter, and they get a good player. So again, I think this actually makes sense for both sides, but the fifth rounder at best is about right. I would have, again, maybe sixth, seventh rounder, maybe even just released and pick him up later. But if you like the player, which Washington clearly did, you're not upset about giving up a fifth rounder. And there's, to me, no way San Fran, and clearly there wasn't, otherwise San Fran would have taken it, but no way San Fran was getting better than a fifth rounder in this situation. And this immediately led people to say, wait a minute, Deebo Samuel just went for a fifth rounder, but I'm supposed to believe that the Seahawks want a first round pick and a wide receiver in exchange for DK Metcalf? That's not going to happen. Before we get into why there is a difference here, I will agree with you in the fact that I think a wide receiver plus a first round pick, especially at pick 23, is too high of a cost. I don't think that that is what DK will go for. I don't think it's impossible. Maybe some team gets desperate and falls in love with DK, and maybe they can get a first round pick in return. But it seems over aggressive to me to give a first round pick plus a player for DK Metcalf. So I don't see that happening. B, I don't think Green Bay would certainly be in on that as well. But there is very much a difference between a DK Metcalf and a Deebo Samuel, and why DK will go for more than Deebo if he does ultimately get traded. Let's look at just the games, right? The games played over the last three seasons and the production over the last three seasons. Deebo, 12 games. We're going to start from like 3 years ago, 2 years ago, last year, okay? 12 games, 56 catches, 632 yards, two touchdowns, 42 carries, 232 yards, and three touchdowns. 15 games the year after that, in 2 years ago, 60 catches, 892 yards, seven touchdowns, added in 37 carries, 225 yards, and five touchdowns. And then this past year, played in 15 games, had 51 catches, 670 yards, three touchdowns, also added 42 carries for 136 yards and a touchdown. All right, that's been Debo his last 3 years. We don't have to go through receiving yards for DK Metcalf, so we'll just go through everything. Or sorry, we don't have to go through rushing yards, so we'll go through everything else. 3 years ago, 17 games played, 75 receptions, 967 yards, and 12 touchdowns. 2 years ago, 16 games played, 66 catches, 1,114 yards, and 8 touchdowns. And last year, 16 games played, 66 catches, 992 yards, and 5 touchdowns. You look at some of the other just stuff, height, weight, speed, everything like that. Samuel, 6 foot tall, 215, just turned 29 years old. PFF grades of 74.1, 84.5, and 70.9. DK Metcalf, 6'3", 229, just turned 27 years old. PFF grades of 77.7, 80.0, and 74.3. There's a few key reasons why Metcalf is going to be far more valuable than what Debo Samuel would be on the trade market. The first one is that age we just talked about. Metcalf just turned 27, Samuel just turned 29. They have a 2-year age difference. So Metcalf being 2 years younger matters a ton in this situation. The next thing that matters is the wear and tear. Debo, the way that the 49ers used him, they used him as a wide receiver, a lot of times lined up in the backfield as a running back, and gave him 42 carries 3 years ago, 37 carries 2 years ago, 42 the year after that, not to mention all of the routes run and everything, the run after the catch when he did catch the ball. He took a beating as a wide receiver. When you put a wide receiver in a backfield role and have him take all those extra hits, there's going to be a significant amount of wear and tear. And we really sort of saw that catch up with Debo Samuel this past year, where he had 42 carries and only 136 yards on those 42 carries, a very, very poor average. Had one of his worst seasons, he had the worst season statistically of his career, and you could start seeing that wear and tear really sort of take hold and him just not being quite the same playmaker that he was in the prime of his career. So the wear and tear and the 2 years younger for DK Metcalf matters a ton here. There's a couple other things too, but there's one really, really big one. What you're looking for is, when you're trading, it's basically simple supply and demand, right? It's scarcity. The Debo Samuel type, you can find versions of that, especially with where Debo's at in his career right now. It's easier to find the slot wide receivers, the gadgety wide receivers, players that you can go and maybe line up in the backfield a little bit. I'm not saying Debo in his prime was somebody that was easy to find. That was not. But the version of Debo right now, you can find players like that. Especially if you look at 29 years old, wear and tear coming off his worst season. It's not like this greatest, most unbelievable, like total package player that you're looking at here. There are some flaws, and you can find a replaceable level player for Debo in that situation, probably in the draft, free agency, etc. And it's not this big game changer that you have Debo on your team. It's going to help. He's a good player. Make no mistake about it. But you can find players like that. With DK, it is so incredibly hard to find the deep outside wide receivers that can stretch the field and make those big plays down the field. Those are really difficult to find right now. And we've been talking about it all offseason to the point where you're like, did Darius Slayton or MVS make sense? Because they don't really have them in the draft. They're not available in free agency. You can't find them via trade unless what? Unless DK Metcalf's available. Or if you don't get DK Metcalf, and you want that field stretching wide receiver, you're probably looking at a DJ Chark, an MVS, maybe De'Ami Brown, who did not exactly do that this past year in Washington. Darius Slayton, like those are the type of players that you're potentially looking at here that would give you that deep threat. And those are not great options at wide receiver. Certainly nothing close to a wide receiver one. Metcalf gives you that deep ball on the outside, that deep playmaking ability, plus he gives you some number one wide receiver traits as well, where he can be that guy. And that is very, very difficult to find. When we talked about Debo and we did kind of the deep dive, I think we did Debo and Cooper Kupp together, but when we talked about Debo, one of the things I talked about is you can acquire him if you're Green Bay. You could have figured out a way to utilize him in the offense, and Matt LaFleur would have been great with Debo Samuel. But he does not solve your quote-unquote number one wide receiver problem at all, because he's not that sort of player anymore. So if you're looking for that explosive playmaking on the outside or closer to a number one wide receiver, they're completely apples to oranges. Debo is going to give you a variety of different things, some versatility, some unique skill set, but DK is actually going to give you that big time potential number one playmaking wide receiver. And that's why he is more scarce. And that's why he's going to go for more money and more draft capital on an open market. The last thing that I'll say here, actually, there's two more. The other thing is contract. And you might say, Andy, come on. Debo's set to make $17.4 million if you trade for him. And Metcalf's set to make $18 million. So clearly that's better for Debo. It is and it isn't, depending on how you want to look at it. But Debo's on a one-year $17.4 million deal. And if I'm Washington, I'm hesitant about whether or not I want to give a long-term deal to him. I kind of just want to play out the season because of his age and the wear and tear that's already there. I'm more likely to just say, we're just going to play this out on a one-year $17.4 million deal. And you might, and here's again why he only goes for a fifth-round pick, you might only get one season out of Debo Samuel in that situation. With DK, yes, it's a one-year 18. You're almost completely going to have a contract in place before that trade even takes place completely. And you're likely getting a long-term deal done for DK Metcalf where you're trading for a player that's probably going to be on your team for three or four more seasons at least. So there's a big difference there too. Might just be 1 year of Debo. You might get 3, 4, 5 years out of DK Metcalf. That's a huge reason why there's going to be a difference in capital. And then there's one other key part here as well. Debo Samuel and the 49ers had already come to the conclusion that they were going to go in a different direction and that Debo was available via trade and he could seek out a trade on his own and there was a divorce coming, right? With DK, there's not. Maybe there is on the back end, but as far as anyone knows right now, the Seahawks are more than fine keeping DK Metcalf and DK Metcalf's more than fine being a Seattle Seahawk. They're in no rush. They're a potential playoff contending team. I'm not saying like a Super Bowl contending team, but they're a team that could potentially make the playoffs this year. And if they wanted to keep DK, they could just keep him. They're in no rush to get rid of him. Whereas San Fran and Debo, you knew that trade was coming. So you look at it and there's a little bit more, just not to use the L word here, but leverage with Seattle to be like, oh, you're just going to give us a fifth round pick. No, we're just going to keep him. Debo, they're just going to take the best offer. And that was the fifth round pick from Washington. Washington called Seattle at the same time and be like, hey, we're about to give a fifth for Debo, but we'd rather give it for DK. Are you interested in this? The Seahawks are going to hang up and laugh at him. It's not even close. So those are all the reasons why DK is going to go for much more than what Debo Samuel is. The 2 years younger, the more consistent productivity over the last few years, the amount of games played and the lack of wear and tear for Metcalf that Debo Samuel has, the salary and where you're potentially getting 3, 4 years of Metcalf, you might only get 1 year of Debo. Finding an outside wide receiver that can actually stretch the field is harder to find. Samuel requested a trade, DK did not. They're in two totally different scenarios. There's a lot at play here and it all leans towards you're going to have to give up something a little bit more significant for DK. Debo's going to go for a fifth round pick. And I'll say one more time, I think actually San Fran did a really nice job in getting a fifth round pick for Debo Samuel. All right, that brings us to our main topic for today, and that is which Green Bay Packers that are currently on the roster could get traded this offseason. I have 10 on my list, some more clear and obvious than others. We'll start with the most clear and obvious of them all, Jair Alexander. We already know he's on the trade block. Green Bay is working to trade him, and if they don't trade him, there's a decent chance that they just move on anyway. So he's probably, likely, almost surely going to be gone. The question just remains to which team and what do they get in return? That's the remaining question. So Jair, we don't even need to go into it further than that. We've talked a lot about Jair lately. He's going to get traded and he's clearly the number one person on this list of Packers who could get traded this offseason. Number two, and this is not outside of Jair. Jair was the clear and obvious one. This is not in any sort of particular order. Number two is Romeo Doubs on my list. Well, first of all, we heard the DK Metcalf rumors of like a pick plus a wide receiver. In that situation, Romeo would make the most sense. But we can play this out pretty simple, right? Let's say you go and you trade for a big time wide receiver, right? Whether it's DK Metcalf or not, or you sign Devontae Adams, you bring in a new number one, all right? let's just use Devontae in this situation, right? Devontae comes in as your new number one wide receiver. And then in that case, Jaden Reed's going to be your slot guy. And you're open to keeping Romeo Doubs, right? But you also have Dontavian Wicks. Maybe Christian Watson comes back at some point. And then you also have Malik Heath and Bo Melton. And you're probably drafting a wide receiver at some point. And you start looking at the depth chart and you say, all right, well, Romeo would be fun to play next to that new number one wide receiver. But you know what? Let's see what he wants in a contract extension as we start looking ahead. And he looks at what Khalil Shakir got this past week, around $15 million per year, and says, yeah, that's what I'm looking for. Grimm's like, okay, we're not even in the same, you know, sphere here of being in the same realm of what you're going to get from a contract standpoint. That could be a reason why Green Bay says, do we just want Romeo for one more year, or do we want to try getting something in return now? The other thing is that there could be frustration from Romeo. Romeo was already frustrated last year, and he had every right to actually go out and be the number one wide receiver in any game last year. And he was already frustrated he wasn't getting the ball more. Good luck when Devontae's your one, Jaden's in the slot, Tucker Kraft is often targeted, and Josh Jacobs is in your backfield. Good luck. You're the fifth option in that situation. If Reed's in the slot, Adams is on the outside, Kraft's at tight end, and Jacobs is in the running back, you are the fifth option in that scenario. So how excited is he going to be about that? He could just demand a trade on his own. He could be, it's like, you know what? I want to go somewhere else. I don't know if anywhere else he's going to be in a better spot than Green Bay, but maybe he just says, I want to go somewhere else. I want to be valued a little bit more. I want to get on the field more. I want more opportunities. All right. But we can look at it, right? So I don't think this is going to happen per se. And I should preface all this, like, outside of Jair, trades don't happen all that often. So we're not going to say like all of these are going to happen or anything like that. It's rare, right? But these are the 10 candidates. If you said Green Bay made one or two trades this offseason, these would be the 10 that make the most sense. And Romeo has to be on that list because of the last year of his deal, suspensions, concussions, potential new additions to wide receiver via the draft and free agency or trades. I could see a world in which Romeo's not happy. The Packers realize they only have 1 year left with him anyway. Some team's willing to take him on the 1 year remainder of his contract where it's not that high of a contract and they can get a cheap wide receiver. I think it could make some sense. And that's why he's number two, again, not in any specific order, but why he's number two on this list. Number three is Dontavian Wicks, and not specifically the same reasons, but more of just like, if they do go out to try to trade for a DK Metcalf or a big time wide receiver, it could be possible that Dontavian Wicks is in that trade. And I don't think he could be someone that's like, nope, he's untouchable, right? Like if Seattle calls and says, we're going to do DK Metcalf for Dontavian Wicks in a third, like you probably just have to say yes at that point. You're just getting a big enough upgrade at wide receiver. It's a third round pick, you know, barely in the top 100. You're probably just being like, yeah, okay. Would I rather give up Malik Heath or Bo Melton or even Romeo Doubs in that situation? Yeah. Because Wicks has 2 years left on his deal, rookie deal. And I'm very high on him and I wouldn't want to give him up. But if it's the right deal, or if it's like a fourth in Wicks for Metcalf, again, I think I probably just have to accept it. So they're certainly not going to be shopping him. They're going to want to keep him on this team. He's super talented, but it can't be a deal breaker either. And if you get a really great deal for a really talented wide receiver and they want Wicks in return, you have to at least be open to it in that situation. Number four is a player that we've talked about, I think, on some Q&As and in some other situations, but Malik Willis. I get asked about this all the time. Like, can Green Bay get a big time pick for Malik Willis? I don't see that. Here's where I come down on Malik Willis. I think he's probably somewhere between like the 30th and 40th best quarterback in the NFL, which gives you either fringe bottom of the league starter or one of the best backups in all of football, right? I think he's somewhere in that range. For Green Bay, he's on a super cheap deal. You get him this year. We saw how valuable of a backup he was last year to Jordan. He can come in and play some really good football and help you win football games. He's a perfect backup in Green Bay. You are in no rush to get rid of him. It is so hard to find good quarterbacks, and Green Bay right now has a good one in Jordan Love and somebody you could step in a pinch if Jordan were to get hurt. That is a luxury and a very valuable commodity to have. If they don't get something significant in return for Malik Willis, you just pass on it and say, we'll take the 1 year of Malik Willis. Even if he leaves an unrestricted free agency to try to get a starter job next year, that 1 year with Malik is valuable. And it's going to take some team offering, in my opinion, a top 100 pick for Green Bay to get off of it. And then if you do get that top 100 pick, I think you have to take it. Because 1 year of Malik Willis, where you're hoping he doesn't even play in the first place, or a top 100 pick, I think in that scenario, you have to take the top 100 picks. But I don't think anyone offers them that. So I think you just end up in this no man's land where if any team's interested in Willis, they're probably not willing to give up what Green Bay wants in order to get off of the 1 year deal that they already have with him. And for Green Bay, I think there's incentive to keep him as the backup unless you're completely blown away. So I just think you end up in this no man's land where, yeah, I'm sure some teams would have interest, but not to what it would need to take in order for Green Bay to actually get off of that contract that is so beautiful on a like 1 year super cheap deal. And I just think he ends up back in Green Bay. So possible, but not likely. And I just think there's probably a difference in what Green Bay would want in return to actually deal him to what teams would actually give up for him. Number five is Kingsley Enagbare. This one makes some sense if you really think about it. He got that performance escalator based on how many snaps he's played in the first 3 years of his career. 1 year, $3.4 million he's set to make. And if they were to trade him, or technically cut him as well, but if they were to trade him, they would save all but $60,000 of that in a trade. He just turned 25 in January, so there's still some upside there, and certainly some team would maybe want to take a flyer on him. I think he would have trade value, but there have been no signs of progression really over the last 3 years. And you could end up in a world where you go get a Khalil Mack or a big time number, you know, Josh Sweat, some sort of new number one defensive end. And it's new number one defensive end with Rashawn Gary, LVN, and Brenton Cox as your top four. And yes, I think Brenton Cox played better last year than Enagbare did. And LVN's probably not going anywhere in that situation. You've got your two primaries and you're left with Enagbare as your number five. And here's the deal, at $3.4 million, he's not worth it as a number five if that's where he is. And on top of that, he's not a great special teams player. So I think, and even one more step on that, is I think you can get at least a seventh round pick for him in return, maybe a sixth. So you start putting the puzzle pieces together of you just went and got this brand new defensive lineman. You don't really need Enagbare. He's coming off a tougher season. At age 25, you can probably get a seventh or sixth round pick in return for him. And you get off of that $3.3 million contract. There's a lot to potentially like there. And I actually thought he was low-key one of the more disappointing players of all of last year. So not, again, super likely, but there does remain some incentive where if he's your number five edge rusher, it's probably just not worth it at that price point with 1 year left on his deal. And some other team I do think would be willing to take a flyer on him for some sort of draft compensation in return. Number six is LVN. This would not be a trade where Green Bay would do without it coming with a big time defensive end in return. Listen, LVN has depreciated over his 2 years, like driving a car right off the lot, right? And then into a fire hydrant. It just isn't the same value that it was when they drafted him. And Goody's not going to be in the business of trading up in the first round with the Rodgers trade, selecting LVN, and then 2 years later, giving up on him for nothing, right? But if it were some sort of Trey Hendrickson or Max Crosby or Miles Garrett trade, and they ask for LVN in return, again, he can't be a deal breaker. So in that situation, that team gets the young up-and-coming defensive end and Green Bay gets the established guy. Obviously, Green Bay is going to have to give draft capital on top of that in those situations, but that would be the scenario in which LVN would be traded. Number seven and eight is Chris Brooks and Emmanuel Wilson. Think of it this way. Let's say you get through training camp, right? And Josh Jacobs is your one. Marshawn Lloyd looks really good as your two. You have both of those guys as your three and your four. And then you really just need, I mean, that could be it in and of itself, right? Where you only want to keep three running backs. You don't think you're going to be able to sneak any of those guys through to the practice squad. Then you see if you can get anything for Wilson or Brooks and maybe pick up a seventh rounder or a conditional pick in return if you can get it. Add on top of that was like, what if AJ Dillon does come back on a 1 year vet minimum? Or what if in this super deep running back draft, you end up with a running back in the fifth, sixth, seventh rounds, and they're actually awesome. Like you get to the end of your roster, and if anyone's willing to give anything for Wilson or Brooks, you probably feel really good about it because you could still have the other one plus Lloyd, plus Jacobs, plus potentially this, you know, rookie or veteran, depending on what happens with Dillon and what happens in the draft. Like you could end up with just a surplus. If you have a surplus and you don't think you're going to get him back in the practice squad, then find something in return. And I don't think it's impossible that they could find something for Wilson or Brooks if that situation became available. Number nine is Colby Wooden, former fourth round pick, has not really lived up to that expectation. This would just be a change of scenery type of trade if you didn't like feel how good or if he just wasn't playing well in camp and you think maybe there's a chance you're going to cut him anyway. Maybe you end up trading him for a player that's going to get cut from another team and just again, that beautiful change of scenery and you hope it works for both sides, whether what or not, who knows. But I could see that being the scenario for Wooden. Probably more likely to hang on to him, but if it's just not working out, that could be another player. And then last but not least, number 10 on my list is Jacob Monk. Now, I think Jacob Monk has every right to be in a competition potentially for a starting center spot if Josh Myers isn't back. But it does still weird me out that he fell out of favor so much last year that he went from basically being one of the top backups on game days to not even active. And like that stayed consistent through the end of the year. He certainly seemed to fall out of favor in some capacity where he really just did not, stay active. And I don't know why. I don't know what specifically happened there, but I will say if they're not feeling strong about him anymore, he was a fifth round pick. There was some buzz around the league that the league liked him. It wouldn't stun me if this was like a Cole Van Landen situation where they drafted him. Then they got to the next training camp, kind of fell out of love with them and were able to recoup a seventh round pick in return. Like I could see something like that if they didn't fall out of favor, or Jacob Monk fell out of favor with Green Bay. If that happens, I could see them potentially getting a seventh round pick in return at cut down time. All right, so the 10 players who I think could potentially be traded this offseason: Jair Alexander, Romeo Doubs, Dontayvion Wicks, Malik Willis, Kingsley Enagbare, LVN, Chris Brooks, Emmanuel Wilson, Colby Wooden, and Jacob Monk. I don't think there's anyone else. And I think even there's probably a couple on this list you could potentially take off, but these 10 make sense to me. I don't think there's anyone else on the roster that really makes any sense to trade whatsoever. That's going to do it again for me. Thank you so much for joining me. Always appreciate you guys a ton. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lloyd, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Huang, Arnaldo Espinosa, Peter Itaka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Step Keith, Dylan Pat Scott, Bobby Santoro, SoCal Pat, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Razul Douglas Time, and Jay Conner. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.